Servant, and he is under Krishna's yoga maya, then That means everybody else is. Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Generally, we make very minimal distinction between Krishna and Balaram. Prabhupada says the only difference is Balaram's white, Krishna's black. So as far as their potencies, as far as what they can do, everything, there's no difference. But then in the Nectar of Devotion, and also Chaitanya Charitamrita, then it's pointed out there is one other aspect, the subtle. There's no, not in their potencies or in their power or prowess or anything like this, but in their mood, there's a difference. Is that Balaram, while being the Supreme Lord, he is also an enjoyer. But there's also the mood that he is enjoyed. He is a servant of Krishna. So you get this aspect, which is something very special. So in rasa, you always have to have two. There's no, you don't have rasa alone. One may think, yes, no, I go out on my own, I'm very happy. But no, we're interacting with what's around us. You know, we see the nice countryside, we like it, but it's our senses and the sense objects. So there's ashray vishay, there's both. So that one is the enjoyer, and one is what is enjoying or receiving. So these two always go on, this is rasa. So now Krishna, he is the center of all relationships. All relationships go back to him. So relationship basically means him. Like this. He is the Lord of the existence potency. So he is rasa. So everything else is connected to him. This is important to understand. So that everything then goes back to him. So whatever relationship we have, it ultimately goes back to Krishna. It doesn't have another foundation other than Krishna. Maybe expansions of expansions of expansions. But still is Krishna. Prabhupada so many times would make this point. He said, whatever it is that means something to us in this world, actually it's Krishna. But it's Krishna in a form that we think it's not Krishna. You know, we like, you know, there's something, we have our, whatever it is we may be attached to in the material world, attracted to in the material world, the tendency is to think that it's that thing. Oh, I like my house, or I like this, or I like, you know, so many things. I like my different relatives, I like my money, I like... But it's actually Krishna. But Krishna is hiding inside this. So he's not seen. So then the whole idea of Krishna consciousness, first to become conscious that you're aware that there is differences in things. That there's a difference between us and the material energy, between us and the mind, us and our desires, us and our intelligence, us and the ego. Then if we can make that distinction, then we can see that it is Krishna, but at the same time Krishna is separate from us. He's separate from that. Right? We're seeing Krishna in some material object, but Krishna, that potency that attracts us is Krishna. But at the same time the object is not Krishna. He's separate from that, but at the same time as that that potency is Krishna. This rasa that is tasted is actually Krishna. But we think it's something else. That's the illusion. So this is the process of Krishna consciousness. Of course, the easiest, what's recommended, is just become Krishna conscious now, this moment. And just think of Krishna, be absorbed in Krishna, and bypass all this technical, you know, intellectual stuff. But if it can't be done, then this is recommended. Is if you think you are the material energy, you are attached to the material energy, your need is the material energy, your activities are within the material energy, then intellectually we have to see and separate ourselves by intelligence. Then by that, gradually we can pull ourselves out of it. And then the mind, instead of getting its taste from the material energy, sees that actually the taste is coming from beyond, it's coming from Krishna. Then it will have the faith to put it all the way to Krishna, to the transcendental realm. Because getting out of the material world, that's not the speciality. It means it's just like someone's very worried about how to wake up, you know, from a dream. That's not the difficulty. The difficulty is to forget about the dream, even if you've woken up. That's the problem. It said one chanting of the holy name clears all sin. So the sin is not the problem. Our attachment to the sin, that's the problem. That's what keeps us here, because we're attached to that. So the sin's gone. You chant one name. Some will say, no, it has to be a pure name. No, Haridas Thakur just says name. Shutanam, something else. He's saying Namabhas, just that you're chanting the name. It's the form of the name, but we don't recognize it as the name. That clears all sin. So sin's nothing. That's not the big trouble. The big trouble is we're attached to that sin. That's what keeps us here. So we're attached to the dream. The dream itself is the dream, but we're attached to it. You know, it's our dream. You know, like that. You know, you see all over, you know, I say Calcutta, you know, my dream is, you know, everybody's reality or something like this. There's an advertisement everywhere. So this idea that the dream is special. So that's the difficulty. So then these points become useful in that we start separating ourselves from this dream. Then we can see the only reality in it is Krishna. But then at the same time is, then we can't get stuck there, because this is a dangerous point. If Krishna is all the things I'm attached to, what's wrong with being attached to it? Right? Because we're not seeing it as Krishna. Our attachment that we have is not a Krishna conscious attachment. It's a material attachment. So material attachment and Krishna, who's more spiritual, there's no rasa. So how are you going to make, even though we recognize as Krishna, how are you going to serve him? Right? Okay, here's Krishna, here's the deity, how shall I serve him? Well, maybe I'll stand on my head, you know, hold my breath, you know, till I turn blue, or, you know, play a nice game of cricket for him, or, you know, how are you going to do it? It has to be authorized, how he says. He says, you serve me in the deity form this way. So then it becomes real. You've connected Krishna to it. Our need for ritual, our need for regulation, our need for religion, then it's connected. But then, what do you do with everything else? We have other attachments. We have attachments, so to means dharma is there, artha, kama, moksha. We have attachments to all these. So then, if you see Krishna there, then how do you serve Krishna in that form? Right? Because material attachment is not enough. There has to be something spiritual. Otherwise, how is it going to please Krishna? Right? It has to be touched, even the slightest bit, to the transcendental potency. Otherwise, what will Krishna gain from it? Even we're seeing him in that. Okay, my affection for my child, or affection for my money, my dad, or, his, you know, unless it's seen that this is Krishna, then how are you going to serve him? So then comes to this point of, we have the two aspects. Intellectualizing on it, so you understand that and separating yourself from it. Or seeing that it's there, and then because of the attachment, following the rules and regulations that regulate that particular attachment. Because then, that way you're connecting to Krishna. Because it means through karma, this is karma mistra, and the other is jnana mistra. Is that until pure devotion, these are our options. Right? We don't really have another option. Pure devotion means it's free from that. But otherwise, then through knowledge, we can situate myself. Yes, I'm not this material energy. I should connect myself to Krishna. So I'm not this body material energy. I'm not the mind material energy. I'm not my money material energy. I'm not my clothes material energy. I'm not my house material energy. I'm not all these things. And then we see how the real shelter is Krishna. The real wealth is Krishna. The real protection is Krishna. The real prestige is being connected to Krishna. Then, like this, one can separate oneself and put Krishna there. Or it's a matter of, okay, I have my wealth, so how does this wealth? Now this wealth is Krishna, so how does Krishna as wealth want to be dealt with? Okay, he wants to be given a charity, he wants to be used for proper work, he wants to be used to maintain devotees. Then you're connecting with Krishna. So in this way, then, either through the rules and regulations of the scriptural injunctions for activity, or through the rules, or through the knowledge that the scriptures give, both of these, one can engage the our attachments of material energy to Krishna, and in this way, dissolve it. Because this is sannyas. This is what Krishna is mentioning in the 18th chapter. Is sannyas actually is this? It means we have, of course, the external forms of, you know, of how one dresses and this and the ashrams one in duties. But that's the external form of it. The real form of it is the mudra sannyas, which means whatever I do is not being done to create some material result for myself. That's sannyas. Otherwise, I'm doing the activity and I give it up. That's renunciation. So that's the realm in which the sannyas may live. But they actually become real sannyas when the activity done is not being done for one's own gain. It's being done for Krishna's gain. Therefore, if we look at that, anything can be engaged in that mode of sannyas. So technically speaking, all the four varnas, all the four ashrams, can be sannyas, situated on the sannyas path. Many times, Prabhupada would always relate to this. Though generally he would talk how to engage your particular position in the Lord's service. But higher than that is this activity of whatever I do is being done to please the Lord, not me. And if that is what is being done, then the result is Krishna's. So that is sannyas. But if we do it, it's mine, then I give it to Krishna. That's good. That's renunciation. So devotees are renounced, Brahmins are renounced. Like this, you know, Brahmacharis, Vaprastas, Sannyasis are renounced. Like this, Grihasthas are practicing to be renounced. So that's there, but beyond that is another level. So that's actually what's important. So we see is, if that can be understood, then we get somewhere. Then we can progress dynamically. It means the process is so potent, no matter who we are or what our position, we will advance. But when we recognize the process, then this process speeds up. Right? You know, it's just like when we understand what's going on. Krishna makes this point to Nanda Baba. When you perform a ritual, he's asking why you perform this Indra Yagya. And he's just saying, well, we've always done it, and you know, when Indra gives rain, so you know, we should reciprocate. Krishna's saying, but you know, but Indra has to give this rain. You know, you've done the yagya, according to scriptures, when you do yagya, you get rain. So what's he got to do with it? He's the office man who's just, you know, sanctioned it and, you know, sent it out to the proper, you know, parties. You know, so he can't explain. So then Krishna makes the point is that if you have knowledge of what it means, if you don't have knowledge and it's done properly, you get results. But if you have knowledge and do it properly, you get more results. Because then you get real understanding or you get realization. So realization is always, that's always higher. Prabhupada talks vigyan. Jnana is knowledge. Vigyan is realization of that knowledge. So realization comes with practice. It means jnana with practice. So that's the speciality that we get in the Gita. Is that we have these two paths of karma and jnana that can be engaged in devotional service. When the two are mixed and used simultaneously, that's called bhukti yoga. That's something unique. No one's seen that before. It's unheard of in the material world. People know jnana and people know karma. And they fight with each other like anything over which is right. But to do both of them at the same time, that's basically unheard of. Though sometimes the impersonalists understand this point. They know that Nishkam Karma Yoga can give you liberation. They know that much. But they don't know more than that. But still, because they're doing it for their own purposes, it's still karma. It's technically not fully jnana, because they're practicing liberation for their own purposes. So actually they're karmis, but their path of karma is using jnana. Other karmis use the path of karma. So actually only devotees can use properly that path of karma, jnana, because they know what is knowledge, who is Krishna, and how it all connects. And they also know what is real activity because it's connected to Vishnu. So because of that, then they go to the next level, which is realization. This is then known as Adhoksija. They go beyond religion to the platform of Adhoksija, which is the fourth level of consciousness. So from that, the Lord is descending. That means they see the Lord descending into everything in the material world. They see how the Lord is in everything. Otherwise, they just see the external, the ritual. Okay, here's this situation, this item, this personality. Then I'm supposed to deal this way, that way. So knowledge is there, but still the focus is on the item of the material world. So that's the platform of religion. But beyond that, then, is where you see Krishna has entered into all these things. And then from that, then very easily, then one can go to Aprakrita, where one is beyond the material consciousness, where one is on the transcendental platform. So that is where Krishna consciousness is trying to get us. That is the specialness. So then here we see that Balaram, then he is also servant. So taking this back means that was a tangent of the original point. Is at least this time we remember, get off of the tangent and then exit. Yeah. Is that Balaram is also servant, so therefore he's called the supreme personality of servant or Godhead. Because he's the top of all of them. As Krishna expands, whatever has been expanded from, one doesn't know, so one is servant of. So Balaram knows everything from him down that Krishna, even he doesn't know. Krishna wants him to know, he knows. Just like now, we're going to see that Krishna reveals something. But for 5 or 6 days less than a year, even Balaram didn't know. Now we'll find Balaram will find out, or figure out something's going on here. Right? He's smart. Right? He's like that. He's the... So then, in that relationship, then this is the position if we can understand that we are servant. That's what makes special. Krishna is God, he's the enjoyer. But unless there's something to enjoy, then where is the exchange? Where's the rasa? So the living entities then means, oh, the internal potency has been expanded and they have taken that position of rasa. They relate to Krishna. Here we see the mothers are relating to Krishna in this way, the cows are relating in this way. So prominently what's going on, because all the friends are in. So friendship rasa is kind of like not being what's important here. Is what's important is the parental rasa here. Means as the cows and as the cowherd men and women, is they relate to Krishna as their son. And this way then they become very absorbed. So when that mood is there, then the rasa is tasted. So then we ourselves then have to be able to distinguish that there is what is the enjoyer and what is the enjoyed. So it's the enjoyed that brings out from the enjoyer the mood. That's the idea. When Krishna, when Mother Yashoda goes in front of Krishna, then she is the embodiment of the parental rasa. So then he who is rasa, then relates to her in that mood. Then you have the exchange of parental rasa. So he is enjoying the mood that she is projecting. So that's how it functions. So that's on the transcendental platform. Krishna is the center. And it works very nicely. We see, we don't see any problems in the relationships in the spiritual realm because they're perfectly organized. The ashray vishay is perfectly situated. Who's the enjoyer? Who's the enjoyed? Is perfectly understood. The enjoyer is Krishna. The enjoyer, everybody else. In the material world, then you get the reflection in the Vedic culture of the exact same thing. So all the things that you mentioned here that Mother Yashoda and the others do for Krishna, in the reflected form in the material world, then in the Vedic culture, a mother does all the same things. Same mood, same everything. So then, generally we think perverted means it's all bent out of shape and everything. No, it's a reflection. So the reflection is exact. So the form of it looks exact. What's perverted is now it's not Krishna is the center. It's someone else is the center. Ourselves is the center. So this is then where things start getting out of line. It's because the mother is thinking, this relationship is for my enjoyment. The child is thinking, this is for my enjoyment. You know, the husband and I are both wrong. This is for my enjoyment. You know, and everybody has their idea. And the businessman is saying, actually, it's for my enjoyment. Because you guys, you know, to take care of your family, buy all of my products. You know, and then the government, actually, it's all for mine. Because he sells the stuff that you guys buy, I get the tax. You know, so like this, it just, everybody thinks they are the enjoyer. So this is the problem. So in the Vedic culture, it's understood as that I follow these rules, and from following these rules, then the relationship will work properly. Despite my having the mentality of being the enjoyer, and despite the other person, other party being the enjoyer, we can still make the relationship work, because we follow the rules of the actual reflection of enjoyer and enjoyed in the spiritual world. Then it works. But if we don't follow, then you have two enjoyers. So there is no rasa. Say what we like, it's not rasa. You know, we may be getting some benefit, but it's not rasa. We are rasas with something else. We got some monetary benefit from them. It's us and the money. It's not us and the person. So it gets very, very subtle in this. Then you can pervert that, but if you give up the Vedic, then you get all kinds of strange, wonderful, you know, manifestations of all these natural five relationships. But otherwise, then they remain. So the idea then is that if this is understood, that this is how rasa is functioning, and then how it breaks down is the transcendental, is the highest form. The middle form is when it is being practiced according to the Vedic culture, trying to put Krishna in the center, like that. And then the last form is just the senses and the sense objects. That's all. And an interesting point to note, it's the sense object that actually is the Vishaya. This is where things really get weird. Is you have your tongue, and you have the Rasgula. Vishwanath gives this example. That the Rasgula is the Vishaya, and the tongue is the Ashraya. Because there's so many forms of the Rasgula, right? The aspects. You know, its shape, its texture, you know, its color. Then you have its taste, it has its smell, right? You get all these things from it, but the tongue is the ashraya simply of the taste. And so you can draw from the rasgula the aspect of taste. Right? So then that's how it's functioning. The tongue can't do something else. The tongue can't smell it. The tongue can't hear what it sounds like. You know? Like that. It doesn't get all those things. That's something else it's getting. So the tongue itself is the ashraya, and the rasgula is the vishaya. He's just drawing from there. So then that's how it's functioning. Of course, ashraya is enjoying. It means in the relationship, both are enjoying. So therefore, but the vishaya is not us. So even still we're being tricked. Krishna, having entered the material energy as a universal form, is still the vishaya. Even though we think we are the vishaya, we're the enjoyer, he's still the enjoyer. You know, when the mother gets around the child, then she brings that rasa out of the child. Still, that other is the ashram, is the vishaya. But we are thinking, I'm going to enjoy this. So what happens, our mentality switches, but the actual situation doesn't. This is the fun. That, you know, Krishna's given us an alternative situation in the material world, but it's still the same as in the spiritual world. Still, God is the enjoyer. Right? God is the enjoyer in the form of the rules and regulations of how the material energy works. God is still the enjoyer as the various items and interactions with the material world. But it's just because it's smaller and smaller, it gets farther and farther away. Krishna become more and more illusioned that it's us. So still Krishna is in control. Still Krishna is the enjoyer. So then the idea is that if we can understand this, then we surrender to Krishna. And then we can see Krishna in whatever we do. Because generally the main purpose is we're trying to enjoy. But if we see that actually maybe we get something from it, but still Krishna is part of it. Still Krishna is there. That's what we're gaining from it is still Krishna. So then why be happy with a lesser form of Krishna? Right? Why be happy with Krishna, you know, in the form of, you know, some material item? When we can be connected with Krishna on the transcendental platform in pure rasa, rather than just sensual rasa or emotional, material emotional rasa. We can be connected to him with transcendental. And the same attachment is all that's necessary. Right? We're attached very much to things of this world, to the emotional and to the sensual platform. But that same attachment, if we put it to Krishna, then we would advance so nicely. So this is the technicality of this technology. Any questions or comments? Yes. Attachment's not so much problem. It means it's what we're attached to that's the problem. Because attachment's natural. It means anything other than Krishna is attached. Krishna is the only entity that's not attached. Right? Everything else is attached because it's all coming from Him. Right? Energy without energetic doesn't exist. So therefore, it's dependent upon Krishna, so attachment is there. So in the spiritual realm, then the identity is I am servant of Krishna. And one attachment is to please Krishna. So that affection for Krishna is there. So the attachment is not the problem. The problem is when we want to become the enjoyer. We want to become God. So then we change these two. Instead of I am the servant of God, then I become God. I am the enjoyer instead of being the enjoyer. And then as the enjoyer, then, you know, whatever it is that happens to be our particular conditioned nature, then that's what we are trying to enjoy. So we're attached to it. So the principle comes down is that the service means here, then they're saying service to the sun, that is important because then one has taken that position as a grihastha and as a mother. So then within that relationship, then that becomes prominent because that attachment is there. We didn't have children because we were unattached. one always has to start from that point. One may say, no, I only have love, but the kid wasn't there before. If that love was there, then it, where was it reposed? Right? So the need is there for that kind of interaction. So then the child is produced, then we become attached. Right? So there is a science there. So then, for the mother, then it's important that that attachment is then connected to Krishna. Right? That's the thing. Now, that means then, is what is that relationship of the mother with the child? That's given by Krishna. Otherwise, what will we know? I mean, you can look around this and there's 8,400,000 options, right? You see cows. They take care of their kids. You see dogs take care of theirs, right? Cows, when they take care of the calf, you know, full attention goes there. Dog, you know, attention's there as long as there's not something else of, you know, more interesting, right? Dog is there feeding the kids, and as soon as it sees something else to eat or bark at, they just get up and walk off. Right? So, I mean, that's also a mother, right? Like that. I mean, so if you look at it, you can look at motherhood and all the species of life. So that's what's available. Right? Then, now the question is which one of those is the one that's fit for human life? That's chosen by Krishna. So then, following that, then indirectly it, you connect it. And it becomes important in that, because that's where the attachment lies, that's what keeps you in the material world. So unless you can connect that attachment to Krishna, how are you going to get out of the material world? Because you just come back again and again and again to taste the relationship of that attachment for a child. So that's why then it's important that the different aspects of the culture are engaged, because they're produced just to deal with the mundane sentiments. That's their only purpose. Right? You know, it's just like someone has an attachment. You know, boy and girl have an attachment. So then you have this ritual called marriage. So that's been designed to address that attachment. Right? And so within that, it has its particular angles of the philosophy and the culture and the ritual and all that. If you study the ritual of marriage, then you'll see great philosophy is there. The whole relationship between them, the whole position, the whole attitude, everything's written into the ritual. You know, generally the ritual is just performed and everybody, you know, goes and has a shot. But if you study the ritual, then, and the mantras of that ritual, all the philosophy of transcendence that is applies in that form of marriage is there. Like that. In the very, very subtle ways. But it's there. So then, that service then becomes important so that one can remove that attachment. It's like someone who has attachment for money, then they deal with the money, but in connection to Krishna. So then you deal with the child in connection to Krishna. So it doesn't mean that you're just sitting at home and just taking care of the kid. That's your most important service. As Prabhupada mentioned, anybody who says that that's their service, is taking care of my kid, you know, has missed the point. It may be their most important, but they miss the point if they think that's enough. Unless that's connected to Krishna, then how it's going to benefit? Right? Because anyway, okay, you for another lifetime taken care, fed, and sheltered somebody, you know, somebody did it last life, somebody else will do it next life. You know, so it was nice, you know, you helped out, you know, like that, you know, like this. Because Krishna is taking care, so your attachment, you want to do it. Okay, you know, like mother is doing the cleaning and stuff like this, and the child wants to do it, so they come out, I'll do it. Okay, you can do it. The mother is doing the work. Kid comes in and this and that, pushes this and that, and then runs off. So that's what happens. Krishna is taking care of the living entity of them anyway. He is the mother, he is the father, he is everything. We come along, our attachment, oh, I want to do it. Okay, so then you do it. Like that. And then the body ends, and then, okay, you know, time's over. Krishna goes back to doing the cleaning, you know, because we've run off. We have a different idea now, you know. So then, like that. So that's the thing, we can take part. So the idea is the attachment's there for us it's real, you know, in as much as the mind is real. So as we identify with the mind, then that means the attachments of that mind are real for us. So then the reality is we have to deal with it. But in dealing with it, we have to deal according to reality. So we have to have the knowledge of what is actually the relationship, and we have to know the process so that we perform it properly. Otherwise, we may just make ourselves more attached. Or, if it's not being done properly, we may pervert the whole relationship. You know, that we get over-attached in a way that's not important, or the child gets it over-attached in a way that's not important. You know, or there's a repulsion in a way that shouldn't be there. And so then it just makes it harder for them. They get more and more and more entangled that way. Because then instead of it being in a pious way, it can go into impious. And that makes it more difficult. The piety is not good enough. Unless you connect it to Krishna, then piety still reaches here. Prabhupada always says that the goal thing is nice. Relationship will be wonderful. But you still get stuck here. That's why Prabhupada mentions this is the system, but wouldn't glorify it. Right? Karmakanda glorifies because the purpose is Karmakanda wants results. You glorify it, they want results. They'll go for it. They'll take it. Right? But the devotees is simply part of our process. The thing to glorify is Krishna, devotional service, the Vaishnavas, the holy name, like this. Varnam is just what we use. So therefore, Prabhupada will say we use it, and then the next statement he'll say that if you become attached to it, that's useless. Because imagine, things are so nice, you follow the Vedic things, relationships will be nice. And so then, when look at it, why did we come to devotional service? Because the material world was great. Fabulous. Much of the time, it's because we were in anxiety. Right? Either a mental anxiety, financial anxiety, anxiety for understanding, you know, what's going on here. Right? Generally. So then now, okay, now I know what's going on, you know, I'm following and performing activities properly, so that will give money. Right? And now the anxieties are gone, the relationships are great. And then what happens to that devotee? Right? They get sidelined. They just become a demigod. Right? It's demigods. Demigods, I'm talking principle, not specifically. Demigod means a devotee of the Lord who does the Lord's service but is attached to the niceties of Vedic culture. So, Prabhupada warned about that. Therefore, he mentioned, he always, after saying this should be used, then he gives the point that you have to be careful because if you become attached to the results of it, then you get stuck. That's why he always presented this principle of detachment. But not detachment meaning giving it up. Detachment meaning that you don't work for that result. So that's many times where it's hard to understand Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada is just talking about this renunciation and detachment. So then we think that means, you know, living under a tree with nothing. No, it means whatever you have is engaged in the Lord's service for His pleasure, not ours. Right? And those who are attached to detachment, then they can use detachment in the Lord's service. Right? The Karmakandi is attached to things. So they use those in Krishna's service. Right? The Jnani is attached to being detached from things, right? Because the things give trouble. They don't want to deal with them. So they're attached to detachment. So they engage in detachment in the Lord's service. But so the devotee just engages whatever the position to please Krishna. So then that is transcendental. So it doesn't matter. So that's how we're able to follow Varnashram and be transcendental. Right? Even other Gaudiyas can't understand this. Like that. Prabhupada gives this, means, you see, like, Gaudiya Mata's always complaining about our opulence and our this or that, and the Goswami's about all these different things. And, no, But that's the point. We can follow ritual and be completely aloof from it. We can have opulence and be aloof from it. We can have form, but we are, we have the proper mood. So the mood has to manifest. It has to give the, hit the ground. It must be form. Form without the mood is useless. Right? But no form, no mood, that's the worst. So that's the specialness of what we see, Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the acharyas are given, is that they have that vision, is that it doesn't matter what you're doing, it just has to be connected to Krishna. If you do that, it's perfect. Therefore, one position is not higher or lower than the other. It's going back to Godhead, it doesn't matter what your position is, you can use it to advantage and go back to Godhead. But when it comes to mundane management, yes, then Varnashram says what's better or what's not. Right? We do that daily, right? A knife is better for, you know, cutting up tomatoes than, let's say, a screwdriver. Like that. But it could work. You could theoretically, if you poked it enough, you could get the tomato to fall into two pieces. You know, you might need a little bit encouragement at the end, but you'd get it to work, you know, and just like the knife could also put a screw in, like that. But the point is if it's you discriminate, this is better in this situation, that's better in that situation, that's all Varnashram does. You want to run a business, then the guy with the business, knack, he's the one that calls the shots, not someone else. Right? Because he has that inspiration, therefore everybody else listens to him. Right? You say, no, the workers. I mean, but the workers just want to work. They just want money. So what business have we seen prosper when the workers are in charge? Right? Communism tried it. They failed. It was an economic failure. Right? Didn't work. Right? When you have unions and you have a strike and all that, is business flourishing? No. Are the people being paid? No. But because they're so foolish, they think they're in charge, but no. There's a guy running the union. He's a business person. He's making the money now. Right? That's all. But they don't understand this. But if you tell them, yes, you know, comrade, you know, or all this, that, then they feel very good and then they follow this guy. But still, they're doing exactly the same thing. They're still the assistant to the business person. But now instead of being to the person that has the business, you know, the what you call a business, now they work for a person who the union is their business. Like that. It's just they still can't change nature. So the idea then is that so that doesn't matter. If you connect it to Krishna, it becomes nice. If you don't connect it to Krishna, then there's no benefit. So many pious people are there, so many nice people are there, have been there, will be there. So what? They're still here. Like that. That's the point. They're still here. Like that. Maybe another form, but they're still around. But if you want to go back to Godhead, that's another point. So that's Prabhupada's point, the Acharya's point, is we're trying to go back to Godhead. So therefore, take whatever is your natural condition, nature, find out how to properly use it in Krishna's service and go back to Godhead. Why stick around? Yes?
In the lecture you were mentioning about sort of the word sin is not a problem. Sometimes in the group of devotees we're going on Prakrama to some holy place and the devotee tour guide says, and in this place this is called Papanashram. This is Papanashram. And some great, great Rishi, he was worried about the souls of Kali Yuga, how they'd be delivered from sin. So he performed very great austerity. And Lord Shiva came, or Vishnu came, or someone came and said, okay, you know, I'll make this Papanashram throne according to your desire, and then anyone can take that there, and all their sins would be destroyed. So, how does great sage can have this conception that how are you going to just chant and send God around?
would think is that the person, especially if such a, you know, the Lord or his great devotees come and give the benediction, that they can't be just ordinary. So then there's also, what's more important is the attachment to it. So maybe that those places, what's happening is it removes the attachment for the sin. Because the sin by devotional service is already, that's removed. It means the devotee is not actually under the influence of karma. It's a very interesting science. I think this is, maybe Haridas Thakur explains this. Then, is that the sin, when you chant the holy name, sin's gone. But now, we still have attachment for the sin. So then, that attachment has to be removed. And for every sin, there is a correctional activity, or there's a correctional reaction that can be either performed willingly or have, you know, thrust upon oneself, you know, unwillingly. And it's designed to correct the mentality. You know, it's like you like to use your hands for, you know, taking things that don't belong to you. Then, you know, then you may lose those instruments for making that mistake. So then one thinks that I should use my hands for better things. So then what comes up is that the attachment of the non-devotee and the attachment of the devotee are the same. It's the same principle, just like the devotee's body is made out of the same elements as the non-devotee. So we go to the market and we pick up a cauliflower. Non-devotee picks up a cauliflower. It's not that we went there and there happened to be one spiritual cauliflower, we picked that up, and then they picked up all the mundane ones. Right? So then, but it's that it becomes spiritualized by coming in contact with the chit potency. So the devotee is working with material energy. But because they're connected to Krishna, it becomes spiritualized. So it's as good as spiritual. Therefore, we can say it's spiritual, or we can say it's, if we want to bring out the philosophical point of this, of its technical connection, then we say spiritualized. But otherwise, we just go on as spiritual, because it gives the same result. So then, for the devotee, then, dealing with material energy, it works in the same way. So, for the devotee, they need to be corrected of a particular attachment. So the method of correction is going to be the same as for a non-devotee. Therefore, even though the devotee doesn't have the sin, the karmi has the sin, the reaction to the sin that he gets. The devotee doesn't have the sin, but he has the attachment to the sin. So then Krishna arranges that he gets that same reaction. And then by that, then that's supposed to be an opportunity to remember, you know, the philosophy, the lore, the culture, and seriously look into or contemplate that attachment. So that he gives it up. The karmi, then they'll think it's bad, but they just move from being impious to pious, pious to impious. So they never give up the attachment. But at least they are guided or encouraged to behave at least nicely. Because it's more, the pious things are easier to engage in the Lord's service than the impious. So it's a better platform on the material platform. So therefore they're engaged in that direction. But for the devotee, then the piety is not the point. So it's not that they're removing the impious reaction or creating a pious reaction. They're removing the pious or impious inclination of attachment. So that's why it says that the devotee has no sin and that his life is being taken care of by Krishna. But at the same time, as we see, is explained that the devotee gets a reaction due to previous activities, previous karma. The karma's gone, but the smell of the karma is still there. So therefore, that reaction comes to remove that fragrance. With non-devotee, it comes to remove the sin from resulting from performing the activity. But for the devotee, it comes to remove that fragrance. Now, if the devotee, due to his own mentality, has already given it up. Therefore, there's no need. That's why they're not under the law of karma. Because they can perform it. They may have performed something that would need correction, but if by the process of chanting and association, they've given up that attachment, you see it doesn't need to be there. Or it may, as it's reduced, then Krishna reduces. So he should get this bigger reaction. If I would say, you got a cut on your finger, you should have had your arm cut off or been killed. So it's been reduced down to that much because the attachment has become that minimal. So now all this, that need to make us think is that little cut, to that little nick. But for the karmi, that won't do anything for them. They need the full reaction. And if it's, and so, and Krishna does this according to the way, when and how he likes. So he can bring reactions when he wants, hold them back when he wants. Or the karmis will just get it in the scheduled fashion, you know, according to how, you know, the papers are stacked up on the desk, you know, okay, they go on, okay, next reaction, okay, you know, Mack truck, you know, four lane highway, dropped $100 bill in the middle of the highway, okay, so then, you know, you miss all the cars going across, pick up your $100 bill, very happy, now you're so happy, you don't pay attention when you walk back and the Mack truck then, you know, performs its duties. You know, like that. So they get, but for the devotee then, it works how Krishna wants it to work. So that's what becomes special. So therefore, it looks the same. Devotee knows that the reason I'm getting this reaction is because of my attachments for performing those kind of activities that would get this reaction. And I have therefore performed them in the past. That goes, but that goes slower. That's the meaning of the seeds going. That's the seed. It means that you have the four parts of, what do you call it? Sin. So, the plant itself, the Phulamukhi, the plant where it's almost going to give result, means your situation is set up. Now all you have to do is walk into it and get your result. And then the fruit itself. Those things are removed immediately. But what takes time is the seed. Because as soon as you do an activity, it sprouts the seed. It means you perform an activity, you take a seed, you perform the activity, it sprouts the seed. At the same time, it creates another seed. It duplicates the seed. So that's the fourth one. That one is sometimes, that's the kutaj, that's the seed. Is by performing the activity, the desire to do it again is created. So if it's a sinful thing, you get another idea to do a sin. It's pious, you want to do that. That's what's wonderful, is a devotional service. You do it, you want to do it again. The opportunity comes up. But that's in another realm. But on the material, so therefore it mentions, if you always like keep yourself absorbed in devotional service, then it's like a flood, and seeds won't sprout when they're always in water. Or another is by the fire of that, you know, devotional service, and it's like the seeds in the pan, they're roasted, they won't sprout either. So that's what devotional service can get at that nothing else can. So that's the meaning, is that getting rid of the sin and all its reactions, that's the easy part. Devotional service does that first off. Other processes, after a long time, they can reduce your reactions or create good for you. You know, it means you've done something wrong. You can do a penance, an austerity, or charity, or different things. You can reduce that reaction or get rid of that reaction if the mentality is proper, if it was done properly, everything. But so it's great endeavor. The devotional service will clear those three immediately. But the last one, then that one, it will purify the heart. As the heart is purified, we give up those attachments. So then they're gone. It's like Prabhupada mentions, you have